In a world divided by a Cold War.
There wasn't a lot of dialogue, and there was some bad blood.
A tournament brought together basketball's superpowers.
At stake, basketball supremacy in the United States.
And showed that greatness knows no border.
It's a landmark game and a lot of media attention.
Featuring a EuroLeague juggernaut, the greatest national team in the world, and your Milwaukee Bucks.
Pressing on the drive, leaves it for coming.
Three teams put it all on the line and changed basketball forever. This is the untold story of a moment that would open the doors to a new world where the best players could finally play on basketball's biggest stages.
Oh, a little dancing time, showtime.
This is the oral history of the 1987 McDonald's Open. I'm Charlie Behrens, and you're listening to Bucks vs. the World, Season 6 of the Behind the Bucks podcast, presented by Gallagher on the Bucks Plus Audio Network.
And I hope that people always remember that international basketball involving the NBA started right here in Milwaukee at the Mecca.
This is Chapter 4. The Crystal Cup.
Today it's a historic occasion for the Milwaukee Arena. It's the first basketball game ever between an NBA team and the Soviet national team. It's a McDonald's Basketball Open, the championship game between the Milwaukee Bucks and the USSR.
The stage was finally set. The finale of the 1987 McDonald's Open would determine the tournament's champion. The Milwaukee Bucks would be the first NBA team to ever take the floor against the world's best national team, the Soviet Union. And for Bill King, who was the Bucks PR director at the time, it felt like the whole world was watching to see what would happen.
We were definitely the center of the basketball universe through that week.
This would be the first NBA game televised in the USSR and China. And fans from 36 countries around the world were tuning in.
Today's game has generated a lot of media coverage, not only in the U.S., but internationally as well. There should be well over 35 countries, ranging from Argentina to West Germany, either broadcasting the game live or tape delayed.
Outside the sold-out stadium, a local news crew from TMJ4 captured a block party where fans came from near and far to be part of the festivities.
In honor of the international basketball matchup inside, Milwaukee put on a global block party. Everything from interviews with the Bucks coach to the ultimate in big screen TV. It made the atmosphere outside Mecca that of a carnival.
I flew out of here from Boston, and I've been looking forward to the NBA playing the Russian team for many, many years, and now that it's come about, I wasn't going to miss it.
Because you can say a lot about Milwaukee, but one thing we know is how to throw a party.
It's really phenomenal. Great party atmosphere. Looking forward to a terrific game.
30 years before the Deer District, the Bucks even set up a huge TV screen outside the arena so fans could watch the game.
Now, today's game has been sold out, but those who don't have tickets are not worried at all, mainly because a large screen television has been set up so those who were turned away from the ticket office, in fact, can come and watch the game and enjoy the other festivities.
They had It was almost like a drive-in movie screen set up on Kilbourne Avenue immediately outside the front entrance to the Milwaukee Arena.
Here's former Bucks PR director Bill King.
There were tens of thousands of fans out on the street watching the game. It was an event to be there. That's the kind of focus that the league office knew they could get in Milwaukee, and they certainly did.
And where better to host what some were calling the World Series of Basketball than the Mecca? The home of the Bucks.
Sense of anticipation for this historical meeting between the Soviet Nationals and the Milwaukee Bucks. And Dick, why Milwaukee? Why'd they bring it here?
Gary, I really believe Commissioner Dave Stern, who's ecstatic about the game, it's like an impossible dream that's happened for him. But he picked Milwaukee basically because it's such a special happening in the city, and there's not a whole deal, a lot to really interfere with the game itself.
As star big man Jack Sikma remembers it, there was nothing like playing in front of Bucks fans in the Milwaukee Arena.
On Milwaukee Bucks and forward, 7 foot, number 43, Jack Sikma.
Well, it's a very loyal fan base. There's a lot of civic pride as far as Milwaukee's concerned, from the people of Milwaukee, and they were loyal to us, sink or swim. You just felt like you were connected to the people. It almost was a neighborhood-type feel at the games.
And this is how Bucks star Terry Cummings described playing at the Mecca.
For the Milwaukee Bucks at forward, 6'9", number 34, Terry Cummings.
The Mecca was really, of all the places that we played at in Milwaukee, was just the most intimate place.
Intimate is definitely one way to put it. With capacity for only 11,000 fans, the Mecca was the smallest stadium in the NBA.
On the Milwaukee Bucks at guard, 6'5", 25, Paul Pressey.
For Bucks star Paul Pressey, that intimacy became almost like a competitive advantage for the Bucks.
It was a different kind of environment, if you will, and the people were on top of each other. And so it was like playing in a high school gym when you think about all the other NBA arenas. Our arena was probably one of the smaller arenas, but we had a package that nobody else could really match. And so the people in Milwaukee came out to support. And I'm quite sure the fans wanted to see, who's this foreign team? How they? What kind of players they have? And so the fan base was already there. All we had to do was get them riled up a little bit.
With the game set to tip off, the Bucks knew what was at stake.
Ladies and gentlemen, please stand now for the playing of the Soviet and U.S. national anthems. First, the national anthem of the Soviet Union.
Soviet triumph would be humiliating, not just for the NBA, but for the country. Something Terry Cummings acknowledged to local reporters from Fox 6 News in the locker room.
It's USA, USSR. It's not Milwaukee, USSR, but it's USA. And it's a matter of prestige and honor.
Even now, Terry remembers what that responsibility felt like.
That was what I remember. You know, I remember the hype of because it was a big thing. You know, Milwaukee's a small town, small market. It was just a really big thing for us to represent the NBA and the country, too.
And this is Bucks head coach Del Harris in an interview that aired before the game.
It's a special thing. I mean, I know all my loved ones are watching, and everyone that ever knew me in my life, I suppose, is watching. And I want to do well, and I know that each of our players wants to do the same thing.
While the Bucks players were burdened by the overwhelming expectations, the players on the Soviet national team were in awe of the spectacle. Here's Soviet forward Sergei Tarakhanov.
Me personally, I was a little bit nervous, excited first of all, and nervous. I knew that a lot of people watched this game. It was televised in USSR also.
The attention the Soviet team was drawing wasn't surprising for Dick Vitale, who was calling the game for ABC. He described the NBA's interest in some of the Soviet stars during the broadcast.
My pleasure to bring in Dick Vitale. And Dick, how good is this Soviet team? They had three guys that have been drafted by the NBA.
Gary, they really do. They got three outstanding players. The guy I really love is the backcourt player, Marcelonis, an outstanding penetrator. Also, Alexander Volkov, a tenacious defender. And then Tikhonenko can shoot the ball from deep. They're a great perimeter basketball team.
But given the Soviet Union's refusal to let their athletes leave the country, Dickie V was skeptical they would ever be allowed to play in the NBA.
Rumor has it that some of these guys will play in the NBA. I think I got a better chance of growing some hair and replacing Bruce Willis as the new sex symbol on ABC than they'll ever play here.
With no guarantee they would have an opportunity like this again, Sergei knew this could be his last chance to measure himself against the world's best.
I was always wanted to understand what level I am and how I can play in this level. I was sure that I can, but, you know, it was no chance for me because those time was forbidden and we cannot travel outside of USSR. And of course, it was kind of challenge. Yeah, that's what I am a little bit nervous about it. But main problem, as I said, that it was kind of too many emotions about it.
And here's Sergei's teammate, Alexander Volkov.
For the Soviet Nationals, at forward, 6'9", number 4, Alexander Volkov.
We really nervous because for us it was very interesting, especially when we were me, Mark Chulionis, and another time Valery Tikhonenko. We was kind of people liked to see us how good we are in order to talk about us to play in the day in future, you know. And especially for us, we have to test the water. Okay, we play one of the toughest NBA team, Milwaukee Bucks at the time. How we're gonna look? How we're gonna look in that game? Of course, we were nervous. We really don't know what we should, how we should play. We have no experience, and it was too much excitement.
Bucks broadcaster Jim Paschke was in the Mecca crowd watching the players take the court, and he knew he was about to witness something special.
I thought it was great, especially in the building that they played in. When you think about an 11,052-seat arena hosting NBA basketball, it's amazing. And now make that international basketball incredible. And I can kind of just remember the lighting and just how it looked. And I was just watching the aura and the spectacle of an international basketball game, which I had never seen before. It was very special. I don't think many people understood what that was going to lead to.
Hall of Fame photojournalist Andrew Bernstein was covering the game for the NBA and described the crowd's excitement, not just for the Bucks, but for the event itself.
I remember the atmosphere in the arena being great. It was like an Olympic atmosphere, quite frankly. I've been to many Olympics, and you know, you're cheering for your country, your hometown, if it's in Milwaukee, but you're also kind of grateful that this is going on in your town. And I felt that too. I felt really honored to be part of it and be able to document this historical event.
Because as excited as fans in the arena were to see the Bucks, the real attraction was the visiting Soviets. Here's local beat reporter Bob Berghaus.
They wanted to see, you know, how the Russians, the only team who had ever won a gold medal outside of the U.S. at that point, you know, would do in that situation against the best basketball players in the world. And they handled themselves very well.
Brewer easily comes away with a tip.
When the game tipped off, Soviet star Alexander Volkov could feel the crowd's enthusiasm for both teams.
It was a full gym, and a lot of people just curious how it is, what's the national teams, what's the Soviet Union, what they can do. And people kind of was support Milwaukee and also support us. And when we did something good in the court, they really cheer for us.
What a power move by Volkov, and it's a 12-9 game in favor of Milwaukee.
And in the first quarter, there was a lot to cheer about, with both teams exchanging baskets and staying competitive in the early going.
What a play! Electricity! Mr. Paul Pressey takes it for the goal!
Here's Bucks star Paul Pressey.
That team, that Soviet team, was just a physical, competitive, nothing-to-lose kind of game. That's what it was.
And as the game's broadcast explained, the legendary coach of the Soviet national team, Alexander Gomelsky, had earned a reputation for demanding the best from his team.
They really worked very diligently in practice. I was so impressed with their workouts. Alexander Gomelsky really puts them through a lot of intense workouts, and I had the chance to talk to him earlier today, and I'm going to tell you something. He really loves Bobby Knight.
Even if some of his tactics were unconventional.
We've talked about Gomelsky. He has directed this Soviet basketball fortune for a long time. He has a very unusual way of getting his team prepared.
He has some unique concepts. Right now, he's timing them 5 minutes, where after practice, every practice, they lay on a floor, and he puts them to sleep. And while he's doing it, he's really emphasizing positive reinforcement constantly. He's talking to them about how good they are.
In the tournament opener, EuroLeague champion Tracer Milan had a competitive showing against the Bucks, only to get blown out by the Soviets in the next game. Former Tracer coach Dan Peterson, who was calling the game for an Italian broadcast, thought the dominance of the Soviet team against Milan made a historic upset in the finale a definite possibility.
And the USSR was a very good team. Gomelsky was a very good coach. The USSR gave a very good account of itself to such a point that I thought, hey, maybe they could give the Bucks a pretty good game.
But as the Bucks settled in the first quarter, it was clear to Peterson they had a different mindset going into this one.
Good defense by Pressey that time. Reynolds to Sigma.
But by this time, the Bucks had seen they had a tough game with Milan, and the Bucks were not going to take any prisoners. They went out there, and it was all business on the final night.
Pretty impressive break down the floor, won by Reynolds, won by Sikma. It brings the crowd to their feet.
For Jack McCallum, who was covering the game for Sports Illustrated, it was clear the Bucks heard the noise after the game against Tracer, and they were going to show the world what they could do.
I can't imagine, after having that close of a call against Tracer Milan, I can't imagine what that Bucks locker room was like. They had to be on fire to come out. And I remember them coming out. They were all over the court. They were trapping all over, and they really disrupted the Soviets.
After dropping 14 of his 24 points in the fourth quarter, in a masterful performance against Tracer Milan the night before, Soviet star Sarunas Marcelonis proved he was an elite prospect.
Marcelonis just isn't finding the mark.
But against the Bucks, he struggled.
He's 1-for-6 right now. He missed his first 5 shots, number 7, but he can flat out play.
Here's Gary Bender, who called the finale on ABC.
You know, they didn't play all that well. Marcelonis couldn't hit, he couldn't throw the ball in the ocean that night.
The dynamics of the time may have had something to do with it.
As you know, we had the time change last night. You fall back this particular time and spring forward in the spring.
Tell me
the
about
Soviets
it.
The Soviets could not handle it. They did not know what to do. Gomelski didn't know you could add hours or take away. So he got his team up at 2 o'clock this morning to change their watches, to move them an hour back. He was that confused about the whole situation.
No, not daylight savings time. I mean, in 1987, you practically had to smuggle in VHS tape recordings across the Soviet border just to watch an NBA game. So there was almost no way for the Soviet team to have anticipated what it was like to play the Bucks.
We didn't know such a term as a scouting report.
Here's Sarunas Marcelonis.
So we know that they can jump, they can run, and they're very good. So that was enough.
According to Soviet star Alexander Volkov, even the genius of Soviet coach Alexander Gomelski couldn't overcome the disadvantages of living behind the Iron Curtain.
Gomelski, of course, he has no idea by himself what's the level of NBA team against what kind of difference and what we should do. Actually, it was first experience for everybody. He tried to convince us. He tried to tell us we're good enough to play within the same level as they are. But of course, nobody had any idea how it was. And of course, he has no idea either, because in his life, he never met any NBA team like we did. We actually were in the same boat. You know, we have a new experience. It was the first game against NBA team. And of course, I understand he has no clue what to do and how to deal with.
And as they say, one thing you can't coach is size.
The Bucks' quickness, open court ability, really have a
good look. Just too strong across the front, Gary. As I said on the top of the show, Sikma and Cummings are just really too talented for their front court.
And the Bucks rolled out one of the biggest lineups the NBA has ever seen. Here's Bucks head coach Del Harris.
Well, we started a big game, really good size, and we had good players. We had Paul Pressey, who's an outstanding player for his whole career. We're an excellent defender at 6'6 and a point guard. But without Sidney, we didn't have that, you know, the Hall of Fame guy. But I decided to start in that spot. A 6'10 shooting guard, Jerry Reynolds, and he was good. I mean, he scored in that game. They had trouble guarding him. And then I had Randy Brewer, that was 7 feet tall, that Terry was 6'9". Jack was, I called him 7 feet. He may have been 6'11", but he played 7 feet. So we had a deep team.
For Soviet star Alexander Volkov, the size overwhelmed his team.
Wow. Volkov got into foul trouble in the game against Milan. He had 4 fouls in the first 6 minutes.
I don't believe, as tough as he is defensively, that he can check Jack Sikma. Sikma, with his experience, but more than that, he's got that inside pivot move where he steps away and shoots that unorthodox jump shot, and he's got great size over Volkov.
First of all, I remember it was very strange to feel huge team on the court, two big teams, you know, size, you know. Second is, of course, that you can see they have a lot of confidence. They know what to do, they know how to play, and they play physical, they play marked. And of course, we kind of was so nervous.
0 for 13 on three-point plays. Can you believe that? That is one of the faces of the game that's been so solid.
That facet of the game's really been shut down because of the tremendous defensive ability that has come in since the jump shot.
Usually, our main weapon could be outside shooting, you know. But because of NBA, three-point line was a little bit longer, you know. It was difficult for us to find the shot. We basically lost our main weapon. We couldn't make outside shots because of we nervous. And that we kind of hanging first quarter, but second quarter they destroyed us.
For Buck star Jack Sikma, the team's strategy started with shutting down two of the team's NBA draft picks, Marshallonis and Volkov.
I remember we came out with a lot of energy. We played much better than we had two nights before. We really got up and down. I think defensively, we really got into them and were able to create some turnovers. I know we pressured Marshallonis when he had the ball in his hands. With Volkov, we were going to make him score over the top, not let him get to the hoop. We felt the farther away from the hoop he was, the less effective he would be. So we overplayed any kind of pass into him. Again, it really set the tone for us and made it really tough for them.
For Marshallonis, the Bucks' strategy was devastating.
Marshallonis just not finding any alley in there. He's going to try one from the side, not hitting. Sikma, good effort inside, comes away with it.
Marshallonis had never been guarded by someone of the capability of Paul Preston.
In European basketball, it's kind of like you always keep distance, you know? And when we play against Paul Preston, with his four hands, and also he's always like right in your pants, and also it's kind of like a very difficult, let's say in Europe, if you're crossing from one side to another side, and also on the offense, you know, nobody's really, how you say, really holding you. And there is like what's it, they're chasing you, so it's very unusual, you know, so that's always, there was a tension wherever you go, wherever you do, you know. What can I do, you know? It's like really, I was paralyzed by such a good defenders.
Even down some of their best players, the Bucks' talent shined on the championship stage.
Protected by Sikma. After the injury to Balistani.
Oh, a little dancing time, showtime.
Here's Bill King, who was the Bucks' PR director at the time.
No doubt that the Bucks were very deep. Paul Pressey really stepped up his game. And that whole point forward thing that Nelly had devised, Pressey played that role to the hilt on that night. And they didn't have anybody that could match up with him. Physically, Terry Cummings was, I always said, if I had to walk in a dark alley with somebody, I want Terry to be that guy. You did not mess with Terry Cummings. And he physically could match up with any of the Soviets. And Jack Sikma was very unique for his style of shooting. Again, they hadn't seen anybody that could shoot the jumper the way he did. There was a lot of firepower on that team, even without Moncrief and Pierce.
For Buck star Terry Cummings, the focus for the team was playing their style of the game.
Terry Cummings posting up. They can't stop him inside on that post-up move.
We just knew we were going to play our game. You know, that was the thing that kept us going.
To David Stern and the NBA, showcasing the league's dominance on the world stage was very important. And with the Bucks leading 67-36 at halftime, David Stern joined Dickie V and Gary Bender at midcourt and couldn't help but gloat.
You know, this is really great for international basketball. It's really bringing together some people, isn't it?
Our players are a little bit too good right now, but it is great. It is terrific, and there's a whole other basketball world out there. There are 200 million people playing basketball. We just happen to have the 300 best here in the NBA.
Del Harris, in his first season as head coach of the Bucks, was following in the footsteps of a legend, former Bucks coach Don Nelson. And his first training camp as coach was cut short so the Bucks could represent the NBA and host the McDonald's Open, an exhibition that was unlike any other preseason game, because this one, he had to win.
Del Harris right now is a very nervous guy, and you don't blame him, number one. He replaces the legendary Don Nelson, a guy that was a hero in this town. Number two, he's in a situation today where there's tremendous pride at stake.
After a close call in the tournament's opener against the reigning EuroLeague champion, Tracer Milan, the noise around the team became deafening when the Soviet team crushed Milan the following night.
Almost four decades later, not all of those details were fresh on his mind when Del Harris began speaking about his experience in the tournament. But when the interview turned to the championship game, the meaning of it all became clear to him again.
Anytime you put USA against USSR, you know the game has tremendous meaning. And he's worried. This is not an exhibition game. They will play it with tremendous intensity.
Wow, I'm getting thrilled all over again, especially knowing the outcome. You're stirring up thoughts that I have buried a long time ago, apparently. I didn't even remember that till you just told me that they smashed them in between. Well, that makes it even better. I'm glad you got hold of me. I'm a human being, and coaches are all sensitive. I was always sensitive as a coach, asking any of the sports writers. So that's pretty good.
More on Behind the Bucks, presented by Gallagher, coming up after this.
Behind the Bucks is presented by Gallagher. Trust is the foundation of any successful partnership, especially when it comes to managing risk and planning your future. That's why businesses turn to Gallagher. With over 95 years of experience, Gallagher has the expertise to help businesses navigate complex challenges and seize new opportunities. As a proud partner of the Milwaukee Bucks, Gallagher is dedicated to building confidence together. To learn more, visit AJG.com. Gallagher, your trusted insurance broker and H&R Benefits consultant.
Boris Stankovic, he was the Secretary General for FIBA.
As the Bucks' lead grew to 48 points in the third quarter, sideline reporter Cheryl Miller spoke with Boris Stankovic, the FIBA Secretary General who willed the McDonald's Open into existence.
You know, this tournament is our first experiment that we had in history to approach the FIBA so-called amateur basketball to professional basketball. Our future depends very much on this tournament.
Boris knew that without the opportunity to take the floor against NBA talent, players internationally would never be able to reach their maximum potential because, as he said, in order to be the best, you have to play against the best.
We need to play against professionals because only playing against the better than we are, we can improve.
And so even in a blowout, the Soviet Union's rising stars learned about themselves in ways European competition couldn't teach them.
Special to see how far, let's say personally, me behind the best NBA players.
Here's Sarunas Marcellonis, who would score 19 points in the game.
So this is like an analysis, you know, how fast they move, you know, how game is fast, you know. So how much we behind defensively, because our weakness, we knew that before we got there, you know. So this like we don't play defense. We think how to score, not how to defend, you know. So we have to know that way to score by 2 points more than opponent, you know. So that's enough.
And regardless of how big the deficit got, the Soviet team never gave up.
Able to hit, not this time. Look at this hustle. Oh, look out. That had to hurt.
We talked about the fact that these guys would have no quit in them, and you saw that.
Here's
right
Alexander
there.
Volkov, who would finish the game with a double-double, scoring 17 points and grabbing 10 rebounds.
We play, we try to not give up. Even when it was in third quarter, 30 points different, we're still fighting. We try to get maximum what we can do. And first of all, to cut deficit, and second, to get maximum experience out of this game, which is obviously the first game. We collapse, let's say, to be true. But it gave us, first of all, that loss brought so much motivation to work harder and kind of not to be in this position anymore. You don't want to look like this anymore. And you work hard, you know, you get everything what you can from the game, get experience, get this knowledge, and work out to grow like individually and like a team to not to be in this position anymore.
For Sergei Tarakhanov, who scored 12 points in the game, the Bucks definitely proved they were the better team. But the game also showed that the NBA players weren't superhuman, and against them, he could still play his game.
Inside us, ourselves, we were thinking that they could do something extraordinary, which we never see. And you need time to accept it, to understand it, and to live with it.
that it's not true, so you can play. Because it was kind of a surprise for me. So I'm shooting and I'm free. I can shoot anytime. I can do what I used to do. And it was kind of a surprise. That's one of the main feelings after this game, that it was kind of a surprise for me that, hey, I can do whatever I did before. And during my career, so I can do it easily.
Now, are you a little disappointed in the way the score is? I mean, the Soviet team is getting blown out here.
Cheryl Miller, in her interview with Boris Stankovic late in the game, asked him if he was discouraged about the lopsided score, and his answer would prove prescient.
The score is really disappointing, but, next time, to have 50 points, the difference will be 40, and then 30, and then 20, and then at the end, we will play maybe even, I don't know. But that is the goal.
Over the next 12 years, FIBA and the NBA would put on 8 more McDonald's Open championships, featuring an NBA team and great clubs and national teams from around the world in major European cities.
Paris, France is the hottest ticket in town. They expect a sellout crowd of 15,000 for the second and final day of the McDonald's Open, a competition that has become a major event on the international sports calendar.
And according to former NBA executive Terry Lyons, the U.S. quickly found out how good the rest of the world's teams were.
You know, indeed, the competition level was high. And, you know, it got closer the more we played. The Knicks almost lost in Barcelona in 1990.
Keep Robert Darwin! Bomba!
That's right. Just 3 years later, the Knicks would need to push the game to overtime in order to beat an Italian club in the semifinals of the 1990 McDonald's Open in Barcelona.
Due in un vagone, tre si va, va! 8 secondi pari qui, rimessa Darren Day!
And the next year, in 1991, Magic Johnson, James Worthy, and the Los Angeles Lakers, fresh off an appearance in the NBA Finals earlier that summer, would need a controversial call in the final seconds of the game from an NBA referee to beat a Spanish club in the championship game by 2 points. A headline from the Los Angeles Times the next morning read, "The NBA remains unbeaten in the McDonald's Open, but it gets by with a little help from its fans."
Out of bounds by Worthy, and they did not get the call. The Lakers won it by 2.
And the gap between international teams and NBA teams would close quicker than even Boris thought.
Well, the first meeting ever between the NBA and the Soviet national team, and obviously it's been a long day for the Soviets. They'll try to go to school, I'm sure, on this game, but the Bucks have really come in here and demolished the Soviet team.
When the final horn sounded, the Bucks were victorious, 127-100. They were the champions of the McDonald's Open and winners of a trophy that a Russian newspaper called the Crystal Cup.
They took this game with a tremendous amount of pride. You and I saw that at practice. They were very intense at practice.
With the weight of not just the league, but the country on their shoulders, they triumphed.
The pressure's off their broad shoulders. The Bucks represented their league, their city, and their nation in fine fashion. It was a fitting way to end a very special weekend.
And the relief in the locker room was palpable.
We were conscious of the fact we were representing a lot of things.
Here's Buck star Jack Sikma, who would be inducted into the Naismith Hall of Fame in 2019, speaking to reporters from local Fox 6 News in the locker room after the game.
We want to make a statement about, you know, where the league is at, and I think we made a good statement in that regard.
For Buck star Terry Cummings, the team had no option but to win that game.
I knew we would do whatever it took to win. We put our heads together, and we knew we were going to have to win, and we knew we would.
And with 23 points, 6 rebounds, and 4 assists, Cummings would be named the MVP of the inaugural tournament. It was an accolade he would share with the greatest players of his generation, like Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, and Tim Duncan.
Wow. That's humbling.
This was Terry Cummings' reaction when he was reminded of the accomplishment and the company it put him in.
Well, I think it was a great honor. I mean, I always had kind of a one-track mind when I played ball, and it was the only time I focused 100% on the game was when the game was won. You know, when I was playing it, when I was practicing. I always did it that way so that I would always focus on giving my 110% while the game is going. I can't always tell you, you know, how it turned out, but I can tell you I put forth the best effort I could. And I had some idea from some of the things that were said back then how important that was to us as a league.
And for Bucks coach Del Harris, who led the team to victory in the face of tremendous pressure, the game was just one accomplishment in a long list of contributions to the international game that culminated in his enshrinement in the Naismith Hall of Fame in 2022.
You know, I've been fortunate enough because of all these great players to be in a few Hall of Fames or things like that, and that never comes up in the resume.
But looking back, it's an accomplishment he feels is overlooked.
Overall, I think it's been overlooked, and I think it's good that you and Milwaukee are putting a refocus, a remembrance on this.
Beyond the court, the championship game between the Bucks and the Soviet Union showed the world how sport could bring even rival superpowers together.
I think it's delightful, and I think there should be more of this that upcomes in the future.
It was a feeling captured by a local TMJ4 news reporter who interviewed a fan attending the final game.
Sports can bring you together. Even though there's other things going on in the world, there's always something that to bring everyone together.
You enjoying the game?
Oh, yeah. It's great.
According to former NBA executive Terry Lyons, that was something the NBA and FIBA took great pride in.
And I think maybe that's the beauty of sports as opposed to our small world of the NBA and basketball, that I think sports unites people. I think even in competition, still unites people. You know, you look at people on the medal podium, they're hugging each other, you know, even though the guy beat out the silver by a half a second. And, you know, I think there's great camaraderie and a love of competition.
Former NBA executive Rick Welts echoed that sentiment.
I think we always had a vision that that could actually build bridges between countries, not create division between countries.
In a news conference captured on local Fox 6 News, Soviet coach Alexander Gomelsky was gracious in defeat.
You have very great players, good coaches. You win today, and I'm congratulations, Bucks. Congratulations, all basketball people, United States.
For the Soviet team, even in a loss, their showing in the tournament exposed their talent to NBA front offices that had previously ignored them.
Players in other countries, I don't think they felt that they had been evaluated properly because American scouts just didn't spend as much time. There wasn't as much emphasis on scouting the international markets.
This is former NBA executive Brian McIntyre.
And there was a prejudice that people thought that European players were softer, that they didn't play defense as hard as our guys could. I think there was a reluctance for the NBA teams to draft someone they didn't really know. And some teams might have thought, well, no one knows these people. How are they going to help us sell tickets?
From Mike D'Antoni, the Italian-American star point guard of Tracer Milan, his experience in both the NBA and Europe made him sensitive to this critique that European players were softer.
You know, the word at first, they're soft, they don't play defense. They're anything but soft. And they're anything, and they can do whatever they want to do. And now whether they were so good offensively that people didn't understand how good they were. And when you have players that grow up, maybe not get paid unless they play well, some countries were at war when they were playing against other countries they had to play against. I mean, just mentally be able to survive that atmosphere and with 20,000 people screaming at you, I knew they were tough mentally. There was no softness to them whatsoever.
Speaking to D'Antoni's former coach at Tracer Milan, FIBA Hall of Famer Dan Peterson, it's clear the spectacle of the McDonald's Open changed the way NBA teams were evaluating European talent.
You see a guy, hey, come on, that guy could play in the NBA. You don't have any doubt. There's
Nobody has to be a brilliant talent scout. You see, when you see that kind of talent and that kind of class, there's no doubt in your mind.
And here's former NBA executive Rick Welts.
I think for the NBA talent evaluators, there was kind of an awakening, right? There was kind of like, oh my gosh, there's something beyond Duke and Kentucky that we need to be scouting going forward. We need to understand what's going on in Europe, and we need to start hiring scouts. So we need to start getting intelligence and information about these players who maybe they can play in our league.
Leaving the tournament in 1987, impressing NBA scouts wasn't the only focus for the Soviet Union national team moving forward. Their sights were now set on the ultimate prize, the 1988 Olympics in South Korea. And according to Soviet star Alexander Volkov, their coach Alexander Gomelsky gave them the ultimate motivation going into the game.
First of all, Gomelsky coach told us if we win Olympic Games, he will do everything to let us go next year to play wherever we want to play outside the Soviet Union. This is his promise.
And the experience of playing the Bucks in the McDonald's Open made the prospect of playing Team USA's college players a lot less daunting.
At the Olympics, we knew that we're going to play against college guys in our universities.
Here's Soviet star Sarunas Marcelonis.
We had much longer experience with that game, you know, against those guys we played lots of time, you know. So that's our level. We understood that this is our level.
In 1988, before heading to South Korea for the Olympics, the Soviet Union's national team would host three exhibition games against the Atlanta Hawks. To Alexander Volkov, the team's experience playing the Bucks in the McDonald's Open gave them a lot of confidence against the Hawks and momentum going into the Olympics.
It was one of the key games which helped us to get confident. It was a game which gave us a lot of motivation. It gave us a lot of feelings what level we have to go. And next year when we play Atlanta Hawks had a tour in Soviet Union. We already played relatively good games and we had three games. First game we lost 2 points, last second shot. Second game we lost in overtime. And third game, we already beat Atlanta Hawks, you know, right before Olympics game. And of course, game against Milwaukee Bucks did make this first shock, first experience, first feelings, which gave us understanding what we can do in future.
The gauntlet of the NBA competition was just one of the tools Soviet coach Alexander Gomelsky used to prepare his team for the Olympics. The other was his secret weapon. His superpower as a coach, the pep talk.
That was a big factor of his speeches or his personal touch.
This is Soviet star Sarunas Marcelonis.
I remember at least twice he came up to me, you know, and okay, so you know how to play against the universities, you know, you played against Danny Manning. Let's say we play against Manning. We played against Arizona, you know, so played those guys, you know, so you played. You won, so no, you should be confident, you know, this and that. And now you got more mature. You had you beat even Atlanta Hawks, you know, once, you know. So it's like, gives like inspiration that, you know, so even NBA teams. So we're talking about now, you know, players who you know, for a long time, you know. So that was kind of like, you know, interesting.
But the most important thing the Soviets had going into the Olympics was their best player, Arvydas Sabonis, who couldn't participate in the McDonald's Open because of an Achilles injury. 23 years old at the time, Sabonis was 7'3" and one of the most dominant big men in the world. But according to Jack McCallum, for basketball fans in the U.S., he was a fascinating mystery.
That was the other thing, by the way, that was missing. The one player we kind of knew was Sabonis. There was this legend of people going over there and being schooled by Sabonis, and he was almost existed like Sasquatch. You know, he was this big guy that would come out of the thing and just dominate you.
For Bucks head coach Del Harris, Sabonis may not have been enough to tip the scales in the Soviet Union's favor in the McDonald's Open, but he was a singular talent.
I also worked with Sabonis a little bit his last year at Portland. I became the advisor to the Trailblazers, and he was still a really good player because he was a passer almost as good as Jokic, but way ahead of his time.
this guy, he would throw anything, and like Jokic and Luka, you don't know where the ball's coming from or going to, but they do. And you just maybe are ready to catch it if you're a teammate. But I don't think in retrospect that, you know, we got ahead of them 40-some points. I think we could have equalized him with our size.
Tracer Malone point guard Mike D'Antoni played against Sabonis in Europe and knew firsthand how special he was.
The first time we saw Sabonis, it was like, oh my gosh. He was like 17 years old, shooting threes, running like a deer. He was unbelievable. I think America saw him on a college tour, that he was just killing everybody at that age. In those early days, unbelievable.
Sabonis was 7'3", shoes off, and perfectly proportioned, and he was a great, and I mean great, athlete.
And here's former Tracer Milan coach Dan Peterson.
Bob Knight said he's the best center in the world. In the world. And that include Olajuwon, Pat Ewing, Sampson, those guys at the time. He's the best center, and he was. If you had seen Sabonis like we did when he was like 20, 21 years old, we played against them in the European Cup. And, you know, it was like playing against Wilt Chamberlain.
Battle-tested by NBA competition, filled with confidence by their legendary coach, and playing alongside a generational superstar, the Soviet Union arrived at the Olympics in 1988, and against Yugoslavia in their first game of the group stage, they lost. But they placed second in the group and made it to the knockout round. And in the quarterfinals, they withstood the offensive firepower of Oscar Schmidt and Brazil, and they punched their ticket to the semifinals, where they would play the United States. And this time, they won in decisive fashion. And in a rematch against Yugoslavia for the gold medal, they came out victorious. In 1988, the Soviet Union men's basketball team won the most coveted prize in international basketball, the Olympic gold medal.
Howie Cartel is great. It's one of the biggest and nicest and enjoyable moment in our life. And for me, it was like we were in a heaven, you know, that moment.
Here's Soviet star Alexander Volkov on what it was like to realize a lifelong dream.
It's something you try to describe, but just you have to be there to understand how it is.
And for Soviet forward Sergei Tarakanov, who would be inducted into the FIBA Hall of Fame in 2021, winning has become a feeling that's gotten stronger the older he's become.
Of course, it was exciting. It was crazy emotions. But interesting that a few years later, when I finished my career and discovered much more emotions about it, and I felt much more proud about it and about my experience, this experience to win Olympic Games, than those time. Because in those time, it was competition, which we played game by game. It was interesting, but I didn't realize that it's so important in my life. I still give you interview, and I'm still talking on TV. I'm still so thanks to this experience in my life.
And for Soviet star Sarunas Marcelonis, it was the beginning of a journey that would lead him to the NBA.
I think it's a relief. It's kind of like, you know, like you feel that so much into this, and also so many years of, you know, of very hard work, you know, and kind of like, you know, here we go, you know. So it's like you're there, you know. It's really, and plus another part of me, like, you know, this is another turn point of your life, you know. So this is another how you say, you don't see like an opportunity, you don't feel that opportunity, but you know that something coming up, something good going to happen to you, you know, because it's an Olympic medal. It's a, well, for me, it's a game, to win game, to lose game is tragedy, to win is, but you know, but probably for others, it's more that we won, you know, than for me as a, to win against Yugoslavia, you know. So for, to win against US, yes, that was kind of like, you know, we're always in a rivalry, you know, so those trips, you know, against college teams, you know, boom, boom. But this is like to win gold medal, like I said, this is more like for for the future, not for present.
The Soviet team may have realized their Olympic dream, but to make it to the NBA, FIBA Secretary General Boris Stankovich would have to finish what he started. He would have to convince the FIBA member states to embrace the NBA and allow NBA players in international competition. At the McDonald's Open in Milwaukee, Boris put together a tournament that brought his vision for the future of basketball to life. And off the court, in the banquet halls and lobbies of downtown Milwaukee hotels, he tried to convince the FIBA leaders in attendance to work with him to make it happen. Former NBA executive Rick Welt saw his effort firsthand.
I also will never forget the dinner that night. Russ Granick was there, I was there, Wondell, Stankovic, and then several FIBA members who had come from Europe to experience this. And it was amazing to watch Stankovic and his diplomatic skills, because he would switch. I think he spoke at least six languages. You know, he would switch in the he was kind of running the conversation at the dinner table. He would switch from, you know, Italian to German to French to Spanish back to English. And of course, Russ and I are sitting there without any language skills wondering what the heck they're talking about. But it really was memorable and kind of made a big impression on me to see the true international nature of the people involved in the sport.
And here's former NBA executive Russ Granick.
I think he was one of the finest people I've dealt with in my 30 years at the NBA. I had a great deal of admiration and respect for him. He could not have been easier to work with. I don't know how many languages he spoke, at least half a dozen, probably more. I think that Stankovic was a consummate politician. He had to be a politician in his job and corral, I don't know how many dozens of countries for a lot of things. But he was a master at it. And I think he did have a vision for the game that people internationally trusted. And the next mission for him was to get the NBA in the Olympics.
Even during the McDonald's Open, the prospect of the tournament being a proving ground for NBA players to play in the Olympics was a topic of conversation.
Commissioner, there's some talk that the players from the NBA might be eligible and play in the Olympics in 1992.
Something NBA Commissioner David Stern was asked about during the broadcast of the championship game.
Well, I think it's going to happen. I think that there's a special Congress scheduled in 1989 that will probably vote on it.
And in April of 1989, during a special session of the FIBA member nations in Munich, Germany, Boris once again brought up his measure to allow NBA players in international competition to a vote. And this time, it passed with overwhelming support, 56-13. After the meeting, he told journalists, "We see this as our triumphant entry into the 21st century." And as former NBA executive Terry Lyons affirms, it wasn't Team USA's loss in the Olympics that changed the course of history. It was Boris Stankovic's persistence.
And of course, you know, the United States Olympic team had lost in 88 over in Seoul. A lot of people think that that's the reason USA basketball changed, but that's not true at all. The USA basketball and the NCAA voted against the NBA players being in the Olympics, but it all was evolving, and it really dated back to 1986 when Stankovic started to take it to a vote, but then realized in a World Congress of FIBA meeting that they weren't quite ready to do it. So he tabled the vote in 86 and then moved it to April of 89. And that April meeting was when it was determined that basketball would be open to anyone. And that actually made it fair, because prior to that, it was pretty much any citizen on the face of the earth could play in the Olympic tournament unless you had an NBA contract. And quite frankly, and quite quickly, everything changed for the better of basketball.
For NBA executive Russ Granick, who worked with Boris Stankovic on putting together the McDonald's Open, the NBA were bystanders to FIBA's decision. But after the measure passed, the NBA would have to figure out how to navigate this new world order.
Sure, after the fact, I think it was a pretty momentous thing that happened, but at the time, we had some concerns. I mean, despite what people think, David Knight did not lobby Stankovic or anybody at FIBA, and certainly not USA Basketball, which we had nothing to do with. And what happened for us was, that was very good, was that the head of USA Basketball at just that time was Dave Gavin. He was somebody who really just cared about the game. He wasn't interested in the politics about who controlled what. He wanted to get the best team out there. And having lost in 88, and in 88, there was no question about we weren't the best team. You know, like in 72. And so Dave called me at some point and said, we're going to have this vote and it's going to pass. He said, you understand, my constituency right now is just the colleges. I have to vote no. They've told me to vote no. So I'm going to vote no, but it's going to pass. And as soon as it passes, there's going to be a lot of pressure about the NBA playing during that period. And as Dave and I talked about, okay, what are we going to do now that this is happening? You know, we were concerned that there would be some people that thought, oh, it wasn't right for the NBA to go in. And a lot of media took that position. Oh, it'll never happen. NBA players won't give up their summer. The owners aren't going to let the players risk injury. They don't care about this. That did come to pass, that we had to wrestle with a lot of that.
For Jack McCallum, who would be recognized with the Kirk Gowdy Award by the Naismith Hall of Fame in 2005, in many crucial ways, the McDonald's Open set the stage for the global game fans enjoy today.
This was part of what happened with the Dream Team when Boris Stankovic knew this. Well, you're going to get beat by 50 points the first time. But meanwhile, all these guys like Ginobili and Nowitzki and Tony Parker are out there looking at this game and they're going, yeah, they're better than us. Jordan's better than anybody. But it becomes like demystified. They're doing the same things we do. We can do that. This game is graspable, and I think the McDonald's Open was one of the first places that we got to do that. To a certain extent, it was the beginning. By 5 years later, we were in the Olympics, and it's the Dream Team, and oh my God, this came out of nowhere. Well, it didn't come out of nowhere. It came out of this gradual idea by Boris Stankovic and David Stern that we should get the two worlds together, and believe me, it was not a slam dunk. That was an idea that everybody was going to adopt. It wasn't. And it was great. And Milwaukee, you know, to the credit of your franchise there, was one of the, whether they were drag kicking and screaming, I do not know, but they certainly deserve credit for a lot of it.
But even before the vote made it possible for the Dream Team to capture the world's attention at the 1992 Olympics, it made it possible for the great international players of the era to play in the NBA. Here's former NBA executive Terry Lyons.
It was an overwhelming vote to include it. And I think a lot of that had been Boris's work between 1986 and 89, discussing it with the Federation heads and everybody getting a very clear picture that a vote yes meant that their guys could play in the NBA and return to play for the national team. That was the main issue for them, of course.
After the vote in 1989, Soviet stars Alexander Volkov and Sarunas Marcellonis were finally ready to take their talents to the NBA. But even with Soviet coach Alexander Gomalski's blessing, they still needed to navigate the country's bloated bureaucracy to get clearance to head to America, and they couldn't do it by themselves. So Don Nelson, the coach and general manager of the Golden State Warriors who had drafted Marcellonis, went to help negotiate a deal that would allow the Soviet players to play in the NBA.
Well, there's a lot of work that we had to do to convince them to do it. And I went to the Russian consulate in San Francisco and met with all the Russians there and laid out the beginning of what was to be a successful agreement with the Russians that would allow Sharunas and the other Soviet players to come to the NBA.
For Marcellonis, leaving the Soviet Union wasn't about trying to escape, as much as it was about chasing an opportunity to prove to himself just how great he could be.
Welcoming Sarunas to the Hall of Fame is Chris Mullin. Ladies and gentlemen, Sarunas Marcellonis.
And in a career that culminated in enshrinement in the Naismith Hall of Fame, going to the NBA did exactly that.
It's not like to leave a country because we hate that country. You know, we were heroes over there. You know? So it's not like, you know, you're sick of this country because we could travel, we could go, you know, so with the tournaments and that was no problem for us, but more like to compete. It's no money is not that motivation. Oh, okay. So in our understanding, we had a car, we had an apartment, we had friends, we had respect. You know, so that was enough. You know, for us. You know, so we were. It's definitely motivation is not money to go abroad to play. For me, it was to play against the best. The best, you know, so to compete, you know, and maybe sometimes to be better. So that's kind of like my motivation, you know, so was only this. You have to understand, we have a saying, you know, that hungry runs faster, always. You know what I'm saying? So when you're well, you know, so you don't push yourself, you know, so when you're hungry, you always run fast. That was my motto at that time, you know, and I think I was on the right thinking that was at that time.
Alexander Volkov, who was inducted into the FIBA Hall of Fame in 2020, joined Marshallonis in the NBA in 1989, playing for the Atlanta Hawks.
Quick outlet pass to Volkov. Good court reception. What a pass by Volkov. Hello, Dominique. Volkov for a three. Yes, Alexander Volkov. To cut to Volkov underneath. Alexander's having a game.
He would play three seasons in the NBA, but injuries and a crowded front court made it hard for him to distinguish himself. But to Don Nelson, he had the talent to compete. He just didn't find the right situation.
I do, and I loved him also. I thought he was going to be a good player. He never made it in the NBA, but he, of course, was a very good player over in Europe after he left Atlanta. But Volkov was good. I thought he had the ability to play in the league if he wanted to stay here. I thought he didn't have much of a chance in Atlanta to play, but if he would have had a chance, he would have developed just like Sarunas did.
The inaugural McDonald's Open in Milwaukee was the breakthrough that led to European and international talent coming to the NBA and the dream team making basketball a phenomenon around the world. For Alexander Volkov, the NBA we see today, with so many of the top players coming from all over the world, is a direct result from the round-robin tournament hosted by the Bucks.
I think it's my opinion, it was a key moment. You know, it's the beginning of new era of basketball in international basketball, NBA basketball. It was a one step, which is NBA and FIBA did it. We were involved and we're so happy we were pioneers on this movement. And of course, I believe it was that game was in the beginning of what we see right now. You know, so many international players play in NBA, so many American players play all over the world as basketball becomes really global. You know, this was one of the moments, which key moment we start, which everything starts from that Milwaukee tournament, McDonald's Open.
According to former NBA executive Terry Lyons, a conversation he had with NBA Commissioner David Stern affirmed the McDonald's Open's place in basketball history.
I was talking with Brian McIntyre, my longtime boss, who's just now one of my best friends. And I recall the time when I was with David Stern, and I think I hit him with something like, okay, the 92 Barcelona Olympics. And I said to him, what do you think is second? And he said McDonald's in 87. And I remember that very clearly. I was trading it with Brian, and he agreed because of the exact same thing. It was the very beginning of us first having the relationships, as we've talked about. But I think it just gave us the massive springboard that ended up leading to Barcelona, which then changed everything. I think each piece of that is so important to laying the groundwork to what the NBA is today, with a quarter of the league being international players.
Ladies and gentlemen, Russ Granick, Rick Welts,
Boris Stankovic, David Stern, Russ Granick, Rick Welts, and Brian McIntyre would all be immortalized in the Naismith Hall of Fame for their contributions to growing the game. And without them, there would not have been a McDonald's Open.
Ladies and gentlemen, David Stern.
The recognition tonight of Boris Stankovic and his induction into the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame to me is testimony that sports and athletic competition continue to be one of the great and valuable methods that we should utilize to bring us all to the realization that the world is really one world.
But Milwaukee would not have been able to host it, and the Bucks would not have been around to play in it, if it weren't for their owner, Senator Herb Kohl. Because according to Joanne Anton, the president and CEO of Herb Kohl Philanthropies, who worked closely with Kohl for over 30 years, the senator was part of the original effort to bring the team to Milwaukee in 1968.
Now a lot of people know that Senator Kohl in his earliest days, and I've heard him tell the stories countless times, that he was instrumental in helping bring the franchise to Milwaukee. He just didn't become its first owner. So that's how far back he goes, and that's how much he loves basketball, loved basketball, and loved Milwaukee. He saw it as a very important flag in the ground or stake in the ground for a community this size and what it would mean to Milwaukee.
So as Joanne explains, in 1985, when many feared the team would be forced to leave Milwaukee, Senator Kohl decided to step up.
It really was because the team was vulnerable. There were lots of conversations about the potential of outside buyers buying the team and moving it. And so they didn't have a home at the, you know, they were going to lose their home at the time, or they were in need of a new home. And so sort of history repeating itself upon the time that he sold the team. So that was really the reason that he wanted to buy the Bucks, was to make sure it didn't, something that he had worked so hard to try to bring to Milwaukee in the first place and that others had stewarded, that he did not want to see that leave, knowing that it would probably never be able to come back to Milwaukee again.
The late Senator Herb Kohl, who passed away in 2023, helped bring professional basketball and the Bucks to Milwaukee in 1968. He bought the team to rescue it in 1985. And worked relentlessly to keep the team in Milwaukee when he finally sold it in 2014. So today, the McDonald's Open Trophy, the Crystal Cup, is where it belongs. In Senator Herb Kohl's office, alongside dozens of other recognitions he earned during his decorated career as a businessman and statesman.
He never liked awards. He never liked the spotlight. So all of these things are wonderful. We sort of had to force him to display them because he didn't believe in making the story about himself, which is sort of the irony of the McDonald's Basketball Open Award that has graced our shelf here for as long as it has, is because it's there equal among all the other wonderful recognitions that he's received, and oftentimes has sort of stood there and been incidental to all the other things that go on in this office. So what you guys are doing to elevate this moment in time is pretty cool.
The McDonald's Open would be the only championship the Bucks would win during Senator Kohl's tenure as owner. The Bucks hosted a tournament in Milwaukee that would usher in a new era of global basketball, one that would allow the greatest players in the world to finally showcase their skills in the NBA. There may not be a banner recognizing the McDonald's Open Championship hanging in Pfizer Forum, but the tournament paved the way for another banner to hang there.
And that'll do it. It's over. The Bucks have done it. The long wait has ended. After a half century, the Milwaukee Bucks are NBA champions once again.
The banner celebrating the Bucks World Championship in 2021.
One of the greatest nights in Milwaukee sports history ends in a coronation.
Although Senator Herb Kohl was not the owner at the time, Finals MVP Giannis Antetokounmpo led the Bucks to their first title in 50 years. It was a moment that meant everything to him because of what it meant to the city of Milwaukee.
He was incredibly proud. He was incredibly happy for the new owners. He was happy for all of the players. He's happy for the people that behind the scenes, you know, that stuck with the team, that helped bring that team to that day and to that year and to that moment. He was really proud and happy for all of them. And most of all, he was so happy for Milwaukee and for Wisconsin. The fact that the new arena had been built, the fact that the legislature and our state agreed to invest, that our city and county officials, and there was a lot of work that had to be done, even while he was still the owner, to lay the groundwork for all of those different things that were political. So the fact that all of those things happened A new building got built. The city of Milwaukee continues to see amazing economic growth. All of those things sort of stem not only from the sale of the team, but a lot can be sourced to that period of time and that transaction. You know, success begets success. And so getting to the championship wasn't just about the team. It was about all of those things and the community's place in it. So his being able to see the fans, his being able to be in that parade alongside what he had tried to do his whole life was incredibly meaningful for him.
This has been a Bucks Plus audio production.